on that I'm giving a hard time with, John Musgrave, my friend who's a historian, author, writer, and a lot of other stuff. But we're going to go into the historian category. First off, John, thanks for joining me on a Monday morning.
Thank you for not making me be here at 7:15.
Did that to somebody else today. Hey, here's the thing. One of my favorite writers, and I can't not coming to mind right now, says the history of civilization is written in the time between ice ages. Well, the history of civilizations are written during that time, but the shape of them are the floodwaters that result. Illinois is a bowl between two rivers, the Mississippi and Ohio. And the reason why we've got such good farmland, it's so flat, is because that area between those two areas, the silt, eventually millions and millions of years. And now we live on the head of a drum, especially important if you want to talk earthquakes. But today it's flooding. And I think with levees, we kind of got accustomed to flooding being a rare thing, but it has really dramatically shaped southern Illinois on both sides.
It's one of those things you can argue, and I certainly do, on whether or not humanity can affect the climate, but we certainly impact our environment. And nowhere does that show up more often than flooding, because when 200 years ago, all we had were forests. Forests hold rainwater much better than fields. Fields hold rainwater much better than concrete and developments. And, you know, we look at places like Shawneetown and they think, well, they're going to build up higher than the last flood. And then what happens? There's another flood. You know, their first major flood was in 1832. Then it took them 15 years. 1847 was the next one. Then it was only 6 years, 1853. Then it was only 5 years, 1858. And finally, at that point, they decided it was time to build a levee, which they finally got built sometime in the 60s, only to be overtopped in 67. 1875, another flood. 1882, another flood. So they raised the levee. 1883, it overtops the levee, so they raise it again.
And that 1883 flood was bad.
Yeah. And in 1884, it flooded again. 1898, which is where we have the flood of Shawneetown Song, that, you know, it broke through one more time.
Broke through the levee?
And, you know, 1912, the levee held. And in the History of Southern Illinois, published that year, it talks about, and it held in the high water of 1912, it will last forever.
That's right. I remember that. If it holds this flood, it'll hold any flood that it happens ever again. I remember that.
And their levee was topped in 1913.
Right. I mean, but see, you see it on a microcosm level, literally, when it comes to human existence. I talked to a young woman from Murfreesboro. She says, this is where it went to the top of my house in 2011. And now I know what the flood crests are, so we know how far it's going to come in my house on 2017. And she says, I think I've had enough. And so did Shawneetown. They thought they had enough, and that's why you've got an old and a new.
Well, finally, after the 37 flood, which that one they didn't, they actually blew up the levee to prevent massive flooding, or prevent, shall we say, violent rush of water from a levee break closer to the river. That's when the federal government decided, let's move the town, and for the most part, they did. And if you've ever seen the pictures, including the picture of them moving the water tank on a flatbed vertical, it's hilarious because you can imagine it's like moving this at about 2 miles an hour from old Shawneetown
up the hill to
new Shawneetown.
If they put it upright and they went up the hill with that grade, that was an interesting job to keep tie it down, I would think.
Yeah, they probably went around a little bit, but still.
I would think, yeah. Still, that's a heck of a trick.
One thing I noticed back in the 90s covering the flood, Junction is the same elevation as Shawneetown, but it doesn't have a levee. And to see people, and one of the guys I talked to who was being flooded had just moved from old Shawneetown, where he was protected by the levee, to a trailer next to the old railroad in Junction, and his was the first place to be
And if you've ever been there, that's one of those areas is flat. You just see a house on a lake when it floods, or a part of a house on a lake. It's interesting because you talked about Shawneetown and the Ohio, of course, the Mississippi giving fits to Murfreesboro, but there's a greater incline coming into Carbondale. But Carbondale's not been immune to flooding in the past either.
No, right now what we're seeing is a lot of flooding from development. You know, last Saturday I had to get to SIU communications building Saturday morning. So I drove through water twice in Marion on Route 13. And I thought I was okay until I got to around the Econo Lodge and Wall Street in Carbondale, and that was even deeper. And what we're finding out, and I know in one of the places that I drove through on 13 in Marion, you know, just upstream from that, there is a new subdivision that is completely triplexes and duplexes. There was a time when that was a field just 10 years ago, and that field was lower than the on the west side of the street than it was on the east side of the street, and all the water on the east side came under the street, and it just fanned out in that field and didn't hurt anybody.
Soaked in.
And it soaked in. Now, not only is there development there, they've added dirt, so there's no way it could even flow onto that property. It now just flows onto my property. And then goes back and goes down the creek, and that's what flooded 13. And it's like, this is ridiculous. We have Main Street can stay open, but our five-lane highway can't.
Well, and these are the problems that Southern Illinoisans have been literally dealing with since 1844. Is that
1837 was
1837?
The first 32 was the first big flood at Shawneetown.
And that's what's pushed us in. We're away from the river in great many ideas. I mean, there's a reason why Murfreesboro is where it is, because you go to the other side and you notice how you drop down that hill to get over to Route 3. Well, suddenly you're in a floodplain. But imagine now, if you will, Harrisburg, Illinois, bigger then than it was that it is now, being 80% flooded and 4,000 homeless people in one community from flooding. And that happened in, I think,
1937. If you've been to Harrisburg, and you know when you're on the square, you're kind of on a hill, and that's known as Crusoe's Island. That's kind of the old, even 19th century name for that territory, because they knew when the water got up, or the Saline River decided it was going to flood, even if the Ohio wasn't flooding, then all that low area around town is going to be underwater. And back in 1937, you're looking at places, you know, you can go back and read the accounts of certain intersections and stuff. You know, they're 8 feet underwater, that's 12 feet underwater, 15 feet underwater. And you drive by Harrisburg today, in the low areas, you will notice that the houses have really tall basements.
Yep, they really do. And what's interesting, as having done so much work as I have on houses in Harrisburg, you help pull off a drywall off an old home, and you're going to say, see this line here? This is where the flood was in 1937. A lot of especially the houses that were built for coal miners during that time period. Caruso's Island, kind of fun name, really, when you think about it. But I heard a story once, doggone it, John. Is that the reason why Harrisburg is the county seat? Because there was flooding? The people from Harrisburg wanted the county seat in Harrisburg. They got in their horse and wagons, went to Raleigh, stole the records, and moved them to Harrisburg because it was above high water or because it was the center of the county.
Harrisburg is more the center of the county, although if you read the county history, the 1887 history of Saline County, it gives the voting results, and it's not quite clear why Harrisburg won when they didn't have the most votes. So there is...
Welcome to Illinois.
Yeah, some little chicanery going on with that. The same thing, when Saline County was created in 1847, it split from Gallatin County. At that point, Equality, which was kind of centrally located in the two counties, was the county seat. Well, in Gallatin County, Equality lost the county seat to Shawneetown. And, you know, there are stories. At one point, the county clerk just appointed an assistant. So he stayed in one town and put the assistant in the other until the county board would stop that. And the county clerk, circuit clerk at that point, I think the county clerk was John E. Hall, who was the son-in-law of John Crenshaw at the old slave house. And there are stories that they snuck the county records out of Equality to go to Shawneetown.
Right. Maybe that's where Harrisburg got the idea.
In a wagon driven by Crenshaw's daughter, because no one would think she was the one taking the records at that point.
Yeah, because Harrisburg, in the middle of the night, went to Raleigh, broke into the courthouse, stole all the records, moved them to Harrisburg, made themselves the county seat. So, Southern Illinois, huh? When it comes to flooding, there'll be one, there's another. That's why we see these levees, and I think, for a certain extent, take it for granted. But, you know, we've wiped out communities here. I wonder which community will be next. Will it be Wolf Lake? I mean, I don't know. I mean, these communities that you just, they keep, because you talked about that frequency, and it's interesting when you read down the frequency, you don't imagine. That's fast. That's a lot of flooding.
Well, it's like.
That affects people, man.
There was a column last week in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch about some of the flooding that, along the Merrimack, and they talk about towns have built their levees higher than what they're supposed to be, which just pushes the water someplace else. And then the guy,
downstream.
Then the guy said, you know, it was global warming. It's like, no, that's not global warming. That's people trying to keep the water out of their backyards and not caring what happens downriver.
Right.
And we see that over and over. Just like the last time Carol was threatened a few years ago, and they broke the levee in Missouri. And it's like, you know, the Missourians are upset. Why are you hurting us? Well, because the federal government bought floodway rights. Back in the 30s from you who own property at that time, so they could do this in the event of another major flood.
Now, you know, even the floods in 1993 in St. Louis were nothing compared to the older ones. There was literally, talked about 900,000 cubic feet coming down like every minute, where in these older floods, they estimate 1.3 million cubic feet, that these huge floods, and then, of course, that's why the Army Corps of Engineers, dams, locks, levees, but still... I'm a big fan of Sun Tzu, the Chinese philosopher and writer when it comes to the art of war. And that when there are massive forces opposed to you, you never stand in their way and stop them. You can only redirect them. You want to direct a massive force that you're opposed to. And that's what we've tried to do, but with limited success. But still, when it comes to, you know, you got the Chester Bridge shut down. When I'm downtown St. Louis Thursday night, I go in and I talk to a couple of people who work at the hotels. There aren't any rooms because people can't get home. And if they did get home, they might not come back to work. So every hotel room is filled. You know, the effect it has on commerce, on land development, its rights, insurance. Today being the anniversary of the May 8th derecho, chances are we're still paying on that in our property, our insurance plans right now for homeowners insurance. We're probably still paying for May 8th. I think we kind of view it as a passing fad, and if it's not happening to me, it's not a big deal, but flooding affects every single one of us, even if our homes are not underwater today, someplace along the river in Murfreesboro.
Yes.
Or farther south, along Route 3. Got to take that into consideration. I want to change subjects on you for a minute, if you don't mind.
Okay.
I know you helped with the locations for Dig Two Graves. I was wondering how it's been doing. You know, we had the premiere here in Marion. How's that movie been progressing? How's it been received?
I think the premiere here in Marion was great. We had probably over 600 people.
Good.
In the Civic Center. It's a 700 that seats roughly in the first floor, and we seem to have filled all but just a handful, and many of those were designated not to be filled for certain reasons, so right. The people wouldn't be in the view of the projector or anything else. That was the 15th. The following week, Hunter went over to Scotland to the Dead by Dawn Film Festival in right. Edinburgh. And there they won the...
I was supposed to say Edinburgh, Scotland.
In Scotland.
In Edinburgh.
Yeah, it was a Scottish horror film. And somehow they won the audience award.
Good.
That wasn't a bad Scottish accent there, but
I like
forgive
it.
Me.
It's all right.
So...
The audience award, audience choice, you mean
I think it's the audience choice award.
Oh, well, that's good. I like that. They're being endorsed by the viewer, the movie patron.
Yes. And this Friday, they open in Tulsa, which is the star Samantha Eisler's hometown. So she'll get to not have to drive very far.
Good.
And the fact that she can drive now. She's 18.
Yeah. And promoted. I'm more than just a little bit curious. Yeah. And I still have not had the opportunity to see it. And then, this is kind of an awkward question. Well, there's some time I'll be able to watch this on like Netflix or Amazon Video
at some point,
or something?
Right now, it has been released on, you can buy it on iTunes. You can get it on Amazon, Google Play, Vudu, Xbox, or PlayStation, video on demand right now.
I think I might be able to find one of those that works.
And then sometime comes, it's Netflix. Hunter, in the question and answers at the Civic Center, he said there would be DVD release at some point, but I have not heard any dates.
Well, I'm more than a little curious, as I said before. So there's one thing that, before I let you go today, I'm going to go back to the subject of flooding. You know, we hate movies. We document our lives. I mean, art is life. Life is art. Now, I had a friend of mine by the name of Uncle Briggs who did a song called The Shawneetown Stomp. All right? Real piece of history there for you. He and Cookie Man. Long time, Cooking Man, long time ago. My friends, I think they're both dead now. I know Briggs is. I was around. But we have a tendency to write and poetry and document things that go around us. And in the late 1800s or early 1800s.
1898.
Late 19th century would be. We were
A long
writing,
time ago.
Thank you, John. We were writing songs about the flood. Now, I'm not going to ask you to sing, John, okay, unless you're compelled to. But there's actually a song about the flooding.
There is a song from G.B. Fields.
1898, you said?
Yes.
Can you share the lyrics or some of the lyrics from this song with us?
Yes. And I apologize for the poetry in this. It is fairly bad.
It's all right.
In the town of Shawneetown, as the evening shades came down, on a quiet Sabbath evening, cold and gray, while the people walked the street, or in Dale Communion Suite, sat within the peaceful homes at close of day. All at once the bells were ringing with a wild and awful din, while the fearful fact breaks over one and all, that the fateful levees broke, pale the lips of those who spoke, while the roaring, crashing, awful flood comes in. On it came with mighty force, spoiling all within its course, wrecking homes and snatching loved ones from their friends, where they found a watery grave, neath a cold and silent wave, to be covered over by the drifting sands. Tongue nor pen ne'er described the hopeless anguish and despair of the poor survivors of that awful flood. And they'll ne'er forget the day Shawneetown was washed away, till they rest beneath the cold and silent sod.
Wow.
And there's two more verses of bad poetry like that.
I liked it, John. I didn't think that was bad poetry at all, by the way, because I take it for the time it was written. But you talk about the pale lips, the shock when people hear this, because I've read other stories about this, that you could hear this thing happening, bang, breck, and the rushing water. I mean, I thought it was good.
Well, and it talks about...
And by the way, outstanding singing, John.
Thank you. It talks about one of the heroes that day, Franklin Robinson, they say, with his boat brought many safely to the shore. While they struggled with the wave, he wrote out their lives to save, working bravely till the awful flood was over.
How many people died? Do you know? Do you have a number there?
25. It's interesting. Shawneetown at that time was 2,500 to 3,000. The initial news report said 250 to 300 deaths. Actually, just 25 died.
Yeah, and some people saying, you know, you don't think of Shawneetown. And in a way, Shawneetown's a different river rats. I mean, that's what I grew up with, you know. Some of those guys who I've known, River Rat Rudy, who I knew all my life, was a friend of my dad. I met him when I was like three. A town that says, you know, Chicago burned. Should we let it borrow some money so it can rebuild? Nah, it'll never be anything.
Well, in 1830, Shawneetown was bigger. Shawneetown was about 300 people. They were larger than Chicago. Then they start selling off the land, so by 1840, Chicago is much bigger.
You know, the first, I was kidding John because it's in his book, The History of Gallatin County, when all of Southern Illinois was Gallatin County, that the first people came across the river to try to save Christian missionaries came into Illinois to save the bad people of Illinois. And within 2 weeks, they were writing a letter back home saying, we can't save these people. We're coming home. These people are drunk, vicious, killing murderers. We are out of here. We're coming home. They cannot be saved.
We have letters. There's, you know, one Bible in that part of the state. That was how, and if we remember the
selling
stories
and
of
trading Indian women. Murder, thievery on a level.
Yeah, when they fought, they would have bar fights. It would be, you know, it would be biting and gouging and stabbing. And one of the early descriptions of the town, they stay at the Rawlings Hotel, which is actually first brick building, which is actually still standing. And they talk about nature's carpeting, which is like a reference. There's been high water, and the debris is still left in the common room.
Oh.
On the ground floor.
And so they call that nature's carpeting from the debris on the floors, from the effluvia, we'll call it, of the river. John, it's always a pleasure to see you, pal.
Thank you.